Thank you. You guys are used to this drill. No prepared notes. We'll do a little opening and then take any questions that you might have. First of all, I really want to express our appreciation as a Board of Governors and on behalf of our players to the City of Providence and the Providence Bruins for hosting this event. The very first All-Star Game of the Modern Era was here 19 years ago. A lot has changed over those 19 years in our league, and what hasn't changed is the Bruins organization continues to be one of the top franchises in the league, and with great ownership, great management, a terrific relationship with the Bruins and the Bruins in Boston. And we're really fortunate. The facilities here are first class. The fan response, obviously, from last night. Today we're sold out for the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. 1,800 people will be here. We're sold out tonight. It's just a terrific place to celebrate our game and our history, and we're very happy to be back here. Having said that, I think probably what is on some of your minds, at least, and probably the opening I would like to go with, is just to talk a little bit about the impact of the NHL labor stoppage on our season so far. It has been, as I probably have mentioned 1,000 times this year, I will say that when the lockout first started, I was all of a sudden having a lot more media attention than I was used to for the first week or so. Jason was screening all these NHL writers and all of the NHL TV personalities and all the big guys that you don't normally talk to. And it was day after day after day of letting my eyes glass over and say the same nice things about the NHL and say the same things about what a challenge it was for our league and what an opportunity it was. And after the lockout ended, I've done one interview until now. So the world has changed somewhat for the better in terms of how much time is spent with the media. But it has been, and we saw it as obviously an opportunity for our league, and at the same time a challenge. We initially had to work out kind of who was going to be in our league and player eligibility rules and figure that out with the various stakeholders that we work with, including the National League, including our Players Association, and trying to look out for the best interests of the real players in the American Hockey League, the guys that would have been here with their no labor stoppage, at the same time understanding that there were a lot of young players that legitimately should be in our league, and there were some veteran players that, even though they required waivers, which they couldn't get through, that we should find rules which would allow those guys, those kind of franchise AHL players, to come back and play. We managed to do that, and I think what we had for, obviously, up until early January, was a very competitive league with terrific players. And I know you all seen Jay's releases, but if you haven't seen the numbers, I think we had 126 of our players move up and open the season in the National Hockey League. And so when you look at the opportunity that the labor stoppage presented, it was an opportunity for our league to really grow our presence, grow our brand, create a lot, not create ourselves, but have the opportunity to have so much more coverage worldwide, really, of our league. And the great players ended in the great cities and competitions. So we were well prepared to take advantage of that from a strategic point of view. We had been through it before. Actually, the first time we were through it was back when the All-Star Game was in Providence, back in 94-95. It was a very similar circumstance in terms of timing. And so we went through it that year, and that was the first year we really had a great television platform for our league. The All-Star event was created so that we could somehow grow the brand when we were a very small regional league and business wasn't very good and we were competing with the IHL, and we thought we needed a showcase event to get us started. And ESPN2, who were also just getting started in those days, carried the game, and some kind of legendary guys were Gary Thorne and others were involved in the broadcast. There's a guy's name, Al Morganti. There's a picture in our office of Al Morganti interviewing me, and we didn't look the same in those days, I'll tell you that. Well, a little bit the same. But anyway, we digress. But that event really helped us to get the league started and to really get ourselves branded for television, and we've gone upward since then. And then in 2004-05, we had another opportunity for the whole year. And our all-star lineup that year, if any of you remember, it was pretty impressive. We had Ryan Miller and Mike Camilleri and Jason Spezza and Eric Staal and Nick Cronwall and on, just tremendous players. And that, again, was a chance for us to grow. And again, this year, we've had some terrific results over the course of the year. But I think we legitimately believe that it's an exciting thing for our players to have had the opportunity to play in as competitive a league as this was, to have players like Jordan Eberle, and you're never going to find a better competitor and a better person in our league as Jordan Eberle. I mean, here's a guy who was in the top 20 scorers in the National Hockey League last year, comes to the American Hockey League, and I can tell you he played hard every single shift in Oklahoma City. He was a leader on that team. He played hard. Every interview he did, he said great things about our league. In national TV interviews, he was saying, you know what, people shouldn't underestimate this league. This is a really tough league to play in. It's tough to be successful. Like everything that he had to say and that Taylor Hall had to say and that Jeff Schultz had to say, all the right things. And we had players like that on every team that were NHL players who respected our league, played hard, and really are appreciative of the opportunity it's given them to be ready to play in the NHL when they go back. And if we look at the stories of Corey Conacher and what he's accomplishing right now in Tampa Bay, and we look at Mike Koska and Nazem Kadri in Toronto, and you can go again, Jacob Silverberg up in Ottawa, and you can Andre Benoit, another guy you'd like to see, a player who's been basically a career American leaguer, having those kinds of opportunities to be successful in the NHL. And I think it just goes to show, and I don't think we have to show NHL GMs anymore. I think there was a time when even they weren't quite as respectful of the caliber of the play in this league as they could have been. I don't think we have to do that anymore, but it does speak to how good this league is, that when we go through a situation like this, like we did this year, players that weren't considered National Hockey League players, all of a sudden they look at them and see how they stack up against NHL players and say, this guy can play. And to see these players getting the opportunity in the National Hockey League and being successful and grasping it, is really rewarding, I think, for all of us in the league, for all of our coaches, for our owners, for the other players. So that's one of the really positive things about this experience we've been through. From a business point of view, our business has been significantly better through the first half. Our ticket sales are way ahead of where we've been in the past. I think year over year we were up about 13% in ticket revenue versus last year at the same time. Actually, that was up until the lockout. We're now even further ahead, which is really interesting in that the last two weekends, if you follow the attendance in the league, where you might expect that we might see a drop-off, I'm not sure logically we should, but you might expect it. We didn't. We've had unbelievable attendance around the league the last two weekends. So, you know, we've got some traction. This is the time of the year where our attendance always gets better, but it was still better these last 2 weeks than it was a year ago at the same time. So we're, I think, gonna keep some of the traction interest that's been developed and generated through the last 3 months. And beyond the attendance side of it, some interesting data for you, at least I think is almost overwhelming to realize what happened to our league over the course of October through early January. If you look at our website traffic, for example, we had last season through early January, we had 4 million visits to our website. Through early January this year, we had 7.6 million visits. If you look at page views, we went from 19 million page views last year to 36 million page views this year during the same period. And the growth of our Twitter followers and Facebook followers and across the league now, I think we have like 790,000 people following our team and league Twitter pages and our Twitter feeds and Facebook. So it's, you know, we've gained some fans. We've gained some interest. We've gained followers. And I think, as always, as a league, we gain respect when we have this opportunity to be kind of the prime league playing in North America. So it's been a terrific 3 months for us. Obviously not terrific for hockey fans in many ways, but good for our league, and it's also good for us to be back to business as usual. And I'm not blowing smoke saying that. I think we're perfectly happy to have had our opportunity for the first 3 months, and we're even happier to see the National Hockey League back playing, seeing our players get the opportunity to go up and play in the NHL. Having business return to normal for us is a good thing. And the hockey's still good in our league. The hockey's still competitive. And we're seeing more player movement than ever. I'm glad that we moved to an electronic player registry, which took us a long time to get there. But we had still been working with an awful lot of paper as players moved back and forth between our league and the National League and the ECHL and There is more player movement than you can imagine if you think about transactions. So this year, for the first time, we actually were able to get ourselves into a mode where we are doing all of that between our teams, our NHL teams, ourselves, the Coast League, in an electronic fashion through our website. And I think if we hadn't done that, my assistant, Melissa, who handles all the transactions, because she's not my assistant anymore, she was, now she's director of hockey administration, she wouldn't be able to get out of her office, because we must have had 1,000 transactions over the last couple of weeks. I mean, if you look at all the player movement that went on, like, I think at the lowest tier of pro hockey, some of you guys could have played 2 weeks ago. Because the whole system, the players kept, they moved up the pyramid. And so we lost, we probably had, when they went to training camp, we probably had 175, 180 players go up to training camp. So we had to find 180 players somewhere else. And so those guys are moving up, and I guess the ECHL had to find some somewhere else. So somewhere along the line, the Federal League or one of those leagues, there must have been some opportunities for guys to play that never played before. But that's been a bit of turmoil for us, as you can imagine, getting our players here for the All-Star event and figuring out who we had available and who to select and how to select them was a bit of a challenge too. But it's worked out great. We've got a great pool of good young players here. They're appreciative of the opportunity, and obviously they put on a terrific show last night. Don't know what else I was going to mention about it. Don't need to, you guys all have questions. So that's kind of the lay of the land in terms of the first 3 months. In every way, television is another thing that was a great opportunity for us. We had a lot of national television in Canada. We have a deal with Sportsnet in Canada who carried basically a game of the week and sometimes more than a game each week of our games. We had excellent ratings. We anticipate that we're going to be able to build on that next year, even with the NHL playing. And we have a contract with ESPN over in Europe, and they carried pretty much every game that we produced was sent over to ESPN America as well. And TVA in the province of Quebec took our games, and obviously a lot of the regional networks in the United States picked up games as well. So again, we had the opportunity for that kind of television platform that we don't normally get. So again, great for us, great opportunity for our players to gain exposure, and overall it's been terrific. The other platform, I guess, that was valuable to us was so many off-site games in NHL buildings. We were very successful at the ACC in Toronto, sold out there. We sold out in Washington at the Verizon Center for the Hershey-Norfolk game. We had great crowds in two games in Montreal, a couple of games in Buffalo, a game in Minnesota. We're coming off an extremely successful outdoor classic last week in Hershey, celebrating their 75th anniversary. We had 17,500 fans at that particular game, and I think about 14,000 the night before for the alumni game between the Penguins and Bears. And it was just a first-class event. So that was an awful lot. We've had a pretty good first half. Like to do what we've done, have the opportunity we've had, and these showcase events over the last couple of weeks, it's really been pretty special. So, questions?
Dave.
Yes.
You talked about the growth of the league, and a lot of the teams are either approaching 10 years within the league, and or over 10 years, minus Rochester and obviously Springfield and Hershey and everything. What's that mean for the health of the league that last year only two teams kind of swapped affiliations and that was it?
Well, the affiliation swap was to some extent just kind of good luck in terms of timing last year. As I mentioned at these every year, affiliations expire in different cycles and some years are more difficult than others. This year is pretty good. We don't have a lot of expiring affiliation agreements. It gets challenging when we have 7 or 8 or 9 affiliation agreements expiring at the same time. And the reason is that when you have independent owners, if you haven't been successful, maybe your business isn't as good as you want it to be and your team hasn't been winning, those relationships sometimes break down. In the old days, they used to break down because our independent owner didn't pay his bills to the NHL team, so yeah. We're saying, geez, how are we going to solve that? Our guy has no money, the NHL club doesn't want to put their players in because they're not being paid for it, and how am I going to get this fixed? Usually it meant finding another owner. But that isn't the case these days. We're far more stable financially, our ownership is stronger, our businesses are stronger in most cases, and so I think we'll all, there will be years, I guess what I'm trying to say is there will be years where we have, multiple challenges again of affiliations, etc., but this isn't one of them. And I think we've become far more stable as a league over the years. A lot of that is because of the quality of ownership. A lot of it is because we've gotten into markets that are sustainable. And a lot of it is that we have, in building our relationship with the National Hockey League as a player development league, and when we took over the IHL in 2001, we created a circumstance where the economics of the relationship between each of our teams and the NHL teams are somewhat better. And one of the challenges for our ownership is if their NHL affiliation agreement is so expensive that their business isn't sustainable, that's how we get in trouble. But by being the only league at this level now, we have obviously a different relationship. And so that has really helped us in becoming more sustainable for our independent owners. Yes, Bill?
With the exception of Providence, when you look at the annual league attendance standings, the New England teams almost always in the bottom half. This is a hockey retirement. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. First of all, we're seeing some real growth in Springfield this year, which is good. And Springfield's team for a long time has not been as competitive as certainly their fans would like and Bruce Lyman would like. And it's been difficult there because it's a city with obviously a long history in our league with really good ownership and management, but you can only lose for so long before people just aren't coming anymore. And so it has shown that having a good team makes a difference. And they're significantly up in attendance, and there's a buzz around the community now that's really positive for hockey in Springfield. So in that situation, it's good. I think Portland is up this year as well in attendance. I'm not sure where Worcester is, Bill. I think they're
about the same
perhaps. And Worcester has, they have a lot of nights where they have tremendous crowds. It's, there's a certain base there that works. And then when you get those weeknight games, as in a lot of markets, it's pretty sparse. But, we do have, and Manchester is rebounding and getting stronger again. There's a good leadership there. So Providence has been terrific. And I think this franchise, particularly with the management team here, Jeff Fear and Matt Poor, they've really, and LaRue with his ownership, have really done a remarkable job. Like, they've built a strong, strong franchise here, and there's a lot of our teams would do well by looking at how things are operating here and copying it. But I think the economy in some of our cities too, Bill, has been challenging, which is the case in a lot of other parts of the country as well. But I think in New England particularly, and I think in Springfield and Worcester, and there've been some challenging times for the economy, and we feel that for sure. But we're solid. You look, and we're fortunate that in some of these markets that have been a little more challenged from time to time, we have NHL-owned teams. And the priority for NHL-owned teams, they don't want to lose money, and they don't want to have an unsuccessful business at the NHL level, but their focus is on player development, and if it, if they absorb a bit of a loss in order to develop players and do what they need to do for the NHL, then they're prepared to do that. And so I think, when you look at the commitment San Jose has in Worcester, and they've just extended their lease for another 3 years, obviously they'd like to see the business be better, but they like where they are. They like that building, they like the community, they like the travel for the players. It's a very good player development environment here in New England in terms of travel. Operating costs are lower than they are in the West. There's a lot of reasons why it's working in New England despite some challenges in attendance in some markets. Brendan?
Maybe touching on what Bill asked about, where are you in discussions about the reduction of the regular season schedule, specifically midweek games?
We are not discussing reducing our schedule further as of today, which is not to say we won't begin to discuss it at some point in the future, but it is not a front burner item for the league as we speak. We are coming to the end of kind of the agreement we had with the NHL on our schedule reduction to 76 games. The discussion will reopen about where we head with schedule length. I anticipate going into next year that it'll probably stay at 76. But we will be looking at, I don't anticipate we'll go back. And I do anticipate at some point down the road we may see a further reduction in our schedule, but I don't see it in the near future.
Dave?
Yes, Pete.
You were just talking about, I'm Nathan Pointer with Green Hockey Journal. You were just talking about, you know, Rister, you know, signing a new lease agreement, stay in the building, you know, maybe affiliation with, you know, San Jose. Have there been any talks about, you know, getting more teams out west to help those travel costs for wrestling teams?
Yes, we have been involved participating as a league with eight of the NHL Western-based teams for the last number of months, I think beginning last spring. And we've been working with them to explore the feasibility of creating a Western presence, a West Coast presence for the American Hockey League. We have a consultant that was hired to do a feasibility study, and that feasibility study report is anticipated to be delivered to us as a group somewhere later in February or in early March. Until we see that study, until we see what the you know, what the findings are, it is too early to speak about it. But you know, we believe, and we've told the Western-based teams that for those of them that really believe they would like to be in the West and that it makes sense for them to be in the West, we will work with them to make it happen. And we legitimately mean that. It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen the year after. I mean, we may see another team out west. We may, you know, whatever develops. But, you know, I think in time, if it makes sense, and we don't know if it does or not from a business point of view, we don't know if it makes sense from a player development point of view, because it depends where the markets are. Like, if you end up in, you know, five Western cities that are all flights from each other, you know, you're not really ahead of the game. And if you end up in five Western cities that don't draw as well as cities in New England draw, again, there's not much point in it. So we need to understand the quality of markets and how difficult it will be to be in those markets. We need to understand how closely they can be, you know, how much synergy there is in terms of travel distance, et cetera, for teams. There's a lot of things to look at. And also, if we have Western-based teams that are currently in the East as owners in our league or as affiliates in our league, transitioning those teams to the West and filling and moving the parts around is going to be a major challenge. So I'm not sure where it heads, but I know that if there is going to be a Western-based element of teams playing at this level, it's going to be in the American Hockey League. So we'll get there if we get there. But Ashley.
Back to that discussion about the West, is there an idea about creating a Western division on the West Coast?
That's exactly what we're speaking of. Is at some point there could be a Western division. And it's doable, it can work. We're not there yet, we're a long way from it.
Follow up to that, is there any idea about crossing over once in a while? I mean, the West teams play the East, the East teams play the West. Toronto's not really a Western city.
Yeah, well, our geography doesn't really help us. In order to have 15 in the West and 15 in the East, some of the teams in the West aren't in the West. And it's challenging every year to figure out how best to structure our divisions and conferences. We think what we've got right now works pretty well. There's great rivalries within our divisions. We've set it up in a way that the travel works the best for us in the West. We've also set it up in such a way that the NBA-based teams, NBA-based, the teams that are in NBA buildings are all in the same conference, and there's a reason for that. It's because the NBA schedule doesn't come out until July sometime, and if we have all those teams on the same side, we can schedule the Eastern Conference and not wait for the middle of July, so that our schedule can come out in the middle of July instead of early August. We get our schedule out instead of in September, which would probably what it would be if we had to wait to start the whole schedule until the NBA dates come out. So there's all the kinds of little intricacies in how we figure out where teams are going to fit.
Pete? Dave, can you follow up on a couple of your earlier questions? Some of the isolated cities like Charlotte and Abbotsford, stuff like that, the economic challenges of those, is that something that they can sustain for a number of years, or are you going to have to try to do something to maybe try to get travel partners or get more cities in some of those areas?
Well, I'm sure they would like more cities close to them. I mean, Abbotsford would be a big proponent of a Western division. It would certainly help them. Charlotte, I think, too. You know, if they could find more rivals other than beyond Norfolk who they can bust to, it would be to their advantage. But we're not at all concerned about them being sustainable. Charlotte's doing terrific. Abbotsford, obviously, has done really well this year relative to previous years. I think playing Oklahoma City helped them, having those guys come into a Canadian market where people knew who, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins was and Jordan Eberle and Jeff Schultz and all that. It makes a difference. Like when you're in a true hockey market that understands that. And then when the Vancouver Canucks farm team comes out, the Chicago Wolves, they sell that one out, and they sell it out on a Tuesday afternoon to see the Canucks farm team play. So they're doing okay, and so it is sustainable. It's not a concern, the travel costs there. But yes, if you could find closer rivals for them, it would help. Yeah?
Dave, you talked about arrangements. The New York Rangers arrangement at the XL Center expires this year. Have they given you an indication of what their plans are for next season?
No, I'm working with them on Hartford itself and on a number of other options. It's you know, we only have one or two affiliation agreements expiring this year. We have two or three leases expiring this year. Again, which is not uncommon. But the situation in Hartford is more unusual in that the building management contract is also up at the same time. And the relationship between the building management company and the hockey team is a critical piece of the whole thing. So the Rangers have been unable to even attempt to negotiate a new lease in there because there's nobody to negotiate with. So it's premature to try and suggest how that may play out. But obviously, I think in the interests of the league and in Hartford, ideally, we will have the Rangers still there and the Connecticut Whale still there as a team and a brand. But we're working on all of that. And any good leader of a professional sports team, if he is not sure if he's going to be in the building the next year, is exploring other options. And we're working with them to see what those options might be. But hopefully they'll be back in Hartford. Yeah.
Dave, obviously hybrid icing ended a few weeks ago and everything. Was there any feedback from the NHL whether or not they liked it? I know they're not doing it this year, so that was probably the reason to stop it in obviously the American Hockey League.
Yeah, I think they liked it. Almost everyone I've spoken to liked it. We liked it a lot. We think it's a good safety measure. It was far easier to call and interpret than we thought it was going to be. When you first read about it, it seemed so confusing. I couldn't figure out how our linesmen were going to be able to manage the whole thing. But it worked from the first game. It worked, and it worked well. The reason that we moved away from it was simply the issue of player movement back and forth between our league and the National Hockey League, and wanting those players not to be disadvantaged by trying to figure out what league they were in at the time, which icing rule was being used. And even that vote was not a unanimous vote. There were a number of teams which generally the NHL assistant GM is the guy voting with the blessing of our owner on those things, and there were a number of those teams that wanted to keep it even with the difference. So I think we'll, you know, whether we see it in the National Hockey League next year obviously is a decision the NHL will make, but I think that they really liked it in our league, and we liked it too. Yes?
Well, what's the league position on teams like the Portland Pirates who play 6 games at the Call Stadium, Moose Stand, where it's not up to AHL standards for the building? What's the league position on teams playing a portion of their schedule of home games outside their main arena?
I haven't been in the building, so I can't comment on what standard it's up to. I've been to Lewiston, though. Just haven't been in the rink.
What's your comment on Lewiston?
Well, there's a very good college there that my daughter almost went to. Until I found out how much it cost. And then we sent her to Canada. But to respond to your question, we believe that it meets the standards that we need from a competitive point of view. They've filled the building for those games. They've got a very good deal with the facility operator, and I think it's given them some good days that they wouldn't have had in their own building. So, you know, it's our teams and our owners are you know, they're going to do the best they can do for their business, and I think it's worked out well for them.
Five more minutes, guys.
So, along the same lines, in the future, given the arena and given the size of the city, is Glens Falls and American Hockey League a location?
I think it is. I think there is potential for us to continue to have a team in Glens Falls beyond the departure of the Phantoms, whenever that may be. I think the response of the fans there has been very positive. It's a difficult market from the perspective of being as small as it is and not having the kind of corporate base that we have in other cities to draw in from a sponsorship perspective. But it's one of our historic cities. It's a building that works for us. It's in a location that works for us from a travel point of view. And I do think there's a chance that we can still be there. And as you may be aware, and I think there was a news release a few weeks ago, the Phantoms ownership group have essentially said to the city of Glens Falls and to the mayor that they are prepared to actually move from there this year and find another location if we find a team to put into Glens Falls, or if Glens Falls finds a team that to go there. So the opportunity may be there for a team to go as soon as this year. But again, it's really premature. I expect the Phantoms, we don't see a whole lot of movement happening, and I think the Phantoms will most likely be back there next year. And I have been in conversation with the mayor, and we have committed to him that we'll work with them to try and keep AHL hockey in Glens Falls beyond that. And I also will say in the Phantoms, which I should have mentioned earlier, I was in Allentown for the groundbreaking for the facility in Allentown, and that is a terrific project. It is doing so much to revitalize downtown Allentown. The support for the team is incredible. The synergies there between Allentown and obviously Philadelphia, with the Flyers being as close as it is, rivalry with Hershey, the rivalry with Wilkes-Barre-Scranton, it's going to be terrific. But we think Glens Falls is a place that we would like to be. If we can make it work financially, if we can make it attractive for an NHL club to go in there, we'll certainly work with the mayor to do it. Yes, in the back.
Mr. Andrews, Tom Chase, Barack News. With several major sports studying and evaluating head injuries, does the AHL track head injuries and are they under scrutiny?
Yes, we do. And I can tell you that, as you know, we changed our rules a year ago following with the NHL, and didn't change ours quite as much as the NHL did, because we already had a fairly strict standard on headshots in our league. We had been through a difficult experience way back in 01, I think it was, or 03, 04, with Alexander Perejogan in Hamilton, and that was the beginning of reevaluating our standards of discipline. So going from there and getting back to the changes in rules, we've had far more suspensions, far more discipline, far more reviews of incidents where we had contact with the head. We've had far more disciplinary action for checking from behind. This year, we're backed off a bit. There seems to be the players are starting to get it. But I think the important thing I do want to share with you with respect to concussions and head injuries in our league is that But one of the things that we're seeing in terms of the data that we're collecting from our teams is that an awful lot, a very high percentage of concussions that have been sustained in our league are not sustained from plays that are illegal plays. And I don't see the National Hockey League's data, but I see our data. And, last year we were probably running at about 70% of the concussions that occurred in our league were legal hits. And the reason we know they were is that our teams have the opportunity, if a penalty isn't called on a play and a player is injured, or even if he's not injured, our teams have the opportunity to submit that for supplemental discipline. So we know when all these concussions occurred. We know where it happened in the game. We don't have video of it all, but if we needed it, we could get it. But we're not getting requests on those hits. Like and so we're in this high-impact collision game with big guys and high speed and equipment that protects the guy that's the hitter so well that there's no fear of making the hit. And so it's become a more dangerous game, and I don't know how we deal with that going forward, but we're starting to at least understand the data and say, we haven't solved the concussion problem by reducing or eliminating headshots.
We've got to start wrapping it up. Diana, do you have
Yes? Just to touch back on the Glens Falls, how important do you think the relationship between a team in Glens Falls and a team in Albany is to have that close proximity and rivalry?
I think years ago it was very important. I think there's still, we see when those teams play each other, there are better crowds in both buildings. So the rivalry, I think, is very important and has been for a long time. and I expect it will continue to be. I think the key for us is to figure out, who may be available 2 years from now and who may have an interest in moving into Glens Falls. And again, it's really early to say that. But, our commitment to the community and to the mayor is we're going to try and help. And we'll do the best we can to do that.
Is there anything in the new NHL CBA that's going to change the way fundamentally NHL teams do business? I was thinking specifically the elimination of re-entry waivers. Because you sort of had a de facto salary gap for a lot of players for a while, and that's gone.
Yeah, there are a number of things in the NHL CBA that will impact us. One of them, which we haven't gotten into discussion about yet, but the performance-enhancing drug testing is going to come to the American Hockey League. Our Players Association and ourselves have been in agreement that we would like to see it happen, but we weren't in a position to do it without the NHL's support because we wanted to dovetail into their program. I have no idea how we're getting there, but I know that the NHLPA and the NHL have agreed to bring performance-enhancing drug testing into our league in conjunction with our union and ourselves. So that, I think, is a very positive step. Our players want it. And at every annual meeting of the Players Association, when I meet with them, that's one of the things we talk about. So that's one thing. The changes to the recall rules are good for us, the four recall rule changing when they go into playoffs. I think from the salary thing point of view, I think where they went with the 900,000 figure in player in our league over $900,000 is going to count against the cap. I think that was fair. I think it's good for our league. It doesn't hurt us. We still get good players in the league. And I think for our players probably would have been better off in some ways if that number was even lower. Because the more one-way contracts that come down that are sort of NHL mistakes, I guess, where the guy is making huge money and he's come down to the American League because he has to play somewhere, takes away a job for an American League guy that's a prospect. So I guess the NHL club would be less likely to send some of those guys down if it counted against their cap. But for us, we think it's good.
One more?
One last one. Yeah. Dave, can you talk a little bit about the feedback about video replay so far in the league this year?
Yeah, it's been good. We really like it. We've had way more replays than we thought we would. We did a test last year in Bridgeport, and I think for the whole period of the test, we might have had 6 reviews. And so we thought, gosh, we're going to spend an awful lot of money on this for something that may not get used very often and may not make much difference in the game. But we've had, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think we've had about 120 reviews. I think it was 111 or 112. What is it, Mike?
111.
So it was off by 9. So up until now, we've had 111 reviews, and 80% of the reviews have confirmed the call on the ice, and 20% have overturned the call on the ice. And I personally like the fact that we don't have a war room, that the referee goes over, looks at it. He's the guy that made the original call. He can see whether he got it right or not, and be done with it, which is, I think, for us, it's perfect.
Thanks, everyone. And Sam's got tickets for the event downstairs.
Also, if any of you had questions,